Hello and welcome back to the Shout Louder podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Williams, and today I am joined by Danny Rascal from Faintest Idea and Knife Club. For those of you who are looking forward to an in-depth conversation about independent music and punk rock and all the things that fall under that umbrella, then unfortunately, this may be disappointing for you. I think that Danny and I managed to talk about everything, but we covered politics, socialism, the housing market, economics. We talked about energy regulation disorders and things like that, how it's impossible to concentrate on one thing at a time. Just kind of about the development that has led not just Danny, but me as well to the people that we are now. I think you'll find it to be a really interesting conversation. It's definitely funny in places. We managed to go off down more rabbit hole tangents than I think we ever have before on the Shout Louder podcast. It was really fun to record, so I think it's going to be a fun listen. We definitely talk a little bit about Knife Club as well, his new secret band, who kept their identities hidden for the first 6 months or so. They've now, well, they got trapped in the pandemic, really. So they've now got, three releases out on TNS Records, but they're only starting to play their first live shows right now. In fact, they were playing their first show while we recorded this, but Danny wasn't with them. We do talk a little bit about what's coming up with Faintest Idea, who are currently in the process of recording a new album, but mostly, we covered 1,001 different tangents. So here we are, we're going to take you along for a ride. This is my conversation with Danny Rascal from Knife Club and Faintest Idea. Hey Danny, welcome back to the Shout Louder podcast.
Hello Sarah, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I think this is what, third time lucky now?
Yeah, third time. Yeah. Should be triple saved.
So you've been on the podcast before. A couple of years ago, we had a bit of a ramble with the whole band talking about all the terrible times that you'd had on tour.
Although that wasn't all the times, we have many more.
I know, it was we had a napkin that you'd written down with all of the worst events that had happened to you on tour. And then we had to pick five of them.
We had to pick out of them.
There was a voting process between the band to work out which ones would be funniest, I think.
But if you want round two of that, we've got many more stories of us.
I feel like there's a book in that somewhere.
That'll come
eventually.
whenever I learn how to focus enough to fucking write, that will come.
And see, that is why podcasting is a more beautiful thing, because you can jump to all these different ideas and you don't have to think about it. You don't have to put pen to paper.
Yeah, my biggest thing, I've never done much formal education, is because I can't sit and write. I can talk. If I could just talk essays, smash anything.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think the only reason that I'm able to actually sit down and write is because I can type fairly fast, and I can almost, not quite at the same speed with which I'm thinking, but I often have if I'm writing an article, I often have five different windows open at the time, and I'll do a paragraph on this, and then a paragraph of that, and then a paragraph there, and then I forget that I forgot started any of them. And then don't post any of them. That's my process.
Fair play. How comes you can type stuff? Did you ever have a job where you typed a lot? Or has it just been writing so long?
Do you know what it was? It was when I was growing up, I was an only child, and I was absolutely obsessed with writing. That was my thing that I did. Yeah. And I spent all of, you know how guys spend their teenage years in their bedrooms and learn how to play guitar really fantastically? Yeah. Sat and typed loads. After fair school play. Every day, I'd just sit and do 4,000 words.
Fucking hell, fair play.
It's all shit as well. I've still got what I wrote.
Yeah, but that's
really
a pretty useful skill, isn't it? Honing writing's a pretty useful skill, isn't it?
I don't know if I was any good at it, but I can definitely do it quickly, put it that way. I feel like we've already reached a tangent. It's gone well. What I was going to say was, the reason that this is third time lucky is because we did record a podcast and then I fucking lost the audio.
I mean, you lost my half of it, so you could have put a podcast out where you just talked to silence.
I mean, there was talk about me filling in the gaps.
Doing a brilliant impression of me, yeah.
Yeah, right? I thought I'd stick on the Queensland accent. Yeah. Just take out I just read out Marxist quotes to go in the spaces and time, you know. Yeah, I think that's
that's me, isn't it? Somewhere between a Southern and Norfolk accent, and then just shout a load of lefty shite. Yeah. That's pretty much me to a T, isn't it?
Yeah. It's fine. I don't even really need you for this podcast, to be honest.
No, it's fine. I'm just window dressing for a podcast.
Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for being here for the third time. I appreciate that. You've done well. What is new with you, Danny? What have you been up to on this fine summer?
Just become a father.
Congratulations.
Mental. It's been good. It's been very good. The first week was pretty intense, but then, yeah, it's been pretty great.
So this is very, very recent, isn't it?
Yeah, this is 2 weeks ago. That was a fucking ordeal. That was 8 days in hospital waiting. But yeah, it all went well in the end, and she's here now, and she's great. So yeah, it's all going really well.
Oh shit, well, congratulations, but also like, well done for going through like, well, I say going through the ordeal, but I suppose it's more your wife that...
it was more Hox, yeah. She bared the brunt of that, because yeah, that was intense. But yeah,
fucking hell, 8 days.
Yeah, it's been good. We've... yeah, she's settled down pretty well, so that's all good. And then other than that, we've been recording a new album as well, which has been very fun. So that is in the works.
Do you feel like the context of the album has changed in any way in your head now that you've also created Life? Having created 3 albums over time?
I mean, keeping a small thing alive is a lot more intense than just... well, no, maybe slightly less intense than trying to organise Bobble.
Yeah, like, I feel like keeping Bobble alive is a risk.
I feel like being in the band with Bobble for 10 years has trained me quite well for looking after a small child that could die at any instant.
I recently encountered a new side of Bobble, which I've decided to call Responsibobble.
Oh, yeah, Responsibobble. He's been around for a little while, but yeah, it's very odd when you first see it, isn't it?
Yeah, Responsibobble is like...
yeah.
I mean, I've definitely seen it before, but it's a beautiful thing. It's interesting watching your sort of punk mates grow up, isn't it? Because, I mean, I say grow up, that's not even the right term. Like mature, evolve,
where did you... Oh, no. I wouldn't say Bobble's matured. I'd say he's grown up and become responsible, but I wouldn't say he's mature.
I was thinking like evolved like a Pokemon kind of thing.
Yeah, like he'd like that, yeah.
You grow into like a fresher, more exciting version of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's what Pokemon... I'm not going to lie to you, Sarah. I know fuck all about Pokemon.
Whoa.
At all.
Whoa. I mean...
I haven't done... On Pokemon Liberation
Where
Army...
Where were you? Bit,
there is the... that's the intro is me speaking for them, and I had no idea what I was talking about then. I was just reading off a script going, yep. And like, people tell me it's hilarious. I have no idea. Absolutely no
Fair
idea
enough.
Pokemon. Yeah. I mean, know what Pikachu is, but... yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know they evolved. Fair play.
Yes, they
evolved. Where did you see Responsibobble then? How did he come out?
Oh, it wasn't in person. It was over text message. But he was being very caring and responsible.
Yeah, Bobble's a very caring person.
I mean, I know he's a very caring person, but it was beautifully responsible. And I hope to see Responsibobble again at some point in the future.
Oh,
but
I also, but
I really do miss Partybobble, who I've not seen in a while.
Yeah, because you didn't have to deal with him, did you?
I mean,
you've never had to load him into a van or a hotel or a fucking whatever. You've never had him try to push you into a fire.
I mean, no. I mean, under those circumstances, I was often the one also being loaded into a van. And so, in some cases, it's happened. It's definitely happened. I do miss like all the shenanigans and stuff like that. I mean, we were talking this morning about the joys of hotels and camping and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there are no joys to camping, but yeah, the joys of hotels. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you crossed over now into the sort of responsible adult who stays in hotels on tour.
Oh, no. I think the thing, I've always hated camping for my whole life because it's terrible. And that's why we invented houses. And then I met Elliot from Nosebleed, who also joined me. So we started Hotel Punks.
Perfect.
And then we sort of, with Faintest Idea, around, it's particularly when touring Europe, not the UK, but like, around 2014-15 we sort of got to a level where like we'd get hotels in with as a standard thing, and then it was like, well, we're never going back now, we've done like years of sleeping on floors, I'm not going back, like you can fuck off. And I cannot stress to you how much I hate camping, and I strongly distrust anyone that does like camping as well.
I mean, I think that's understandable. I mean, I think camping for me, I've definitely had some fun times when I was camping, but it wasn't the camping itself that was fun.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm up for being around a campfire, all of that shite. It's the actual sleeping in a tent that I fucking hate. Do you know what it... Well, I think the thing that properly sealed it... Don't get me wrong, I'll stay on a floor in someone's house, squat floors, like traveler sites, whatever. I'm just saying, I need walls. I need dry... dry
you like a
more
wall.
Than anything. Do you know, like, the thing that finally sealed the deal, I think, was 2014, Boomtown, and it was the Friday. Oh. We were watching the Skints outside, and it started spitting, and we were like, that'll pass, it's fine, it's August, isn't it? And then, like, it just hammered it down for about a day and a half solidly with no let up. And I remember on the Sunday, I remember waking up at 10 with my Hox and Nick, like one of our mates, and like our airbed had gone down, the poles had broken. And I just remember laying on the cold, wet floor on a come down with like the wind hammering the side. So like, obviously tents never keep you dry, do they? So all the water was just splashing in my face. And I just remember laying on the floor just thinking, this is the worst fucking thing in the world. This is terrible. Why are people doing this for fun?
I remember I was at that Boomtown as well. And
oh, it was awful, wasn't it? They prepared nothing for rain at all.
Oh my God, it was horrendous. A, it's like, you know, bless Boomtown because it is fun as fuck, but it's really badly organised. Like,
yeah,
you know, and particularly back then it was.
Well, it grew out of like free parties and Krusties, didn't it?
So, yeah,
like,
and it's still considering kind of maintained that, it's that done authentic really fucking vibe. Well. Yeah. Yeah, it was authentically crusty at points. That like the they had sort of volunteers and stewards who were quite often like high as fuck. And trying to direct you. And it was just like, oh my God, like, I'm just trying to find my campsite, please. But yeah, so I was at that Boomtown, and I don't know, if it's pissing down and it's at a festival, I can normally just about kind of get past it and like embrace it and pretend that I'm fine at the very least. And my partner I was with at the time, he absolutely could not. And it rained so much that weekend and he just gave up and turned, like, you know, bless him, he was really, really genuinely miserable. But I particularly remember, I think it was like, what, the Sunday morning, and the tent that we were camped in, it was quite big. It was I've got an old like six-man tent that's got like a, you know, a section at the front where you can
Sectioned ones. Yeah, I've seen them.
One of them. And me and my partner were in like the tent bit. But in the morning I woke up and like all of our mates had crowded in the front bit of the tent because they could sit in there and drink and still be dry and stuff like that, because they're all in these like tiny little two-man tent type things. And I was just like, I remember just being sort of sat in my sleeping bag being like, it's nice that you're all having a nice time and that you're dry and that you're drinking Strongbow for breakfast. But for fuck's sake, I need a piss. Like, and I don't want to have to leave, like, get out of my way. I don't want to have to put clothes on. I want to have a piss and come back and go back to bed. Fuck off out of my tent.
Fair play, yeah.
That was a wet weekend.
Yeah. I just get irrationally angry at weather, which isn't a good look for anyone, is it? Any fucking functioning adult.
Well, you say that, but in many ways, I think the weather is irrationally angry at us.
It fucking is at the minute. It's been the worst summer I've ever, like, I can't remember one being this shit. Every day I wake up, I'm like, maybe there'll be sun. Never sun.
No.
There is never sun at the minute.
It's
just grey.
After sort of, you know, working from home through a lot of the pandemic and basically not taking any holiday because I thought, oh, well, it's not worth it just to sit at home. For the first time in my life, I took a week off last week without any specific plans for what I was going to do. I was like, right, I'm just going to have a week off. I'm going to have a little holiday. I'd kind of planned to go to London, but COVID fucked that plan. So, you know, I won't go into that, but, you know. But basically, I had a week off in the middle of August and it fucking pissed down and was miserable. And like, it was like nighttime during the day, every day of the week.
Yeah.
And what else happens? The second I go back to work this Monday, bright sunshine. And I
know how shit it was for a lot of people, so I'm not trying to glorify like lockdowns or that. But the first lockdown, I cannot describe how much fun I had. It was because, like, I'm always someone that's like, I need to be doing stuff, like, you know, like fear of missing out, but like also just on the go, like all the time. And then suddenly when that couldn't happen, I suddenly, the first time in my life, actually felt rested, because I was like, well, I can't do anything, so I can't. Plus, we have a garden and it was really sunny. So me and my wife just pissed all the time in the garden. I was like, this is fucking brilliant. Like, I know there's a global pandemic and everyone's dying. That's terrible. But like, for me personally, this is fucking brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Individually, then, it's great.
Yeah. And then this summer, I was like, oh, well, at least it'll be summer. And then nothing. Just like everything's opened up and nothing. It's just been shit.
Yeah.
Hey ho. Again, I'm getting irrationally angry at weather.
It was particularly nice last year. But again, it's like it knew that we needed some sunshine. I mean, almost. I mean, I'm not really going to speculate in this sense, but it does suggest a higher power that it, you know, if there was evidence of a god, perhaps just being sunny when we're all off work in a pandemic is what we're looking at there.
I mean, killing millions of people globally just to have a bit of sun seems, for a higher power, does seem on balance.
I mean, it's not very godlike either, is it? I mean, he was more of a kind of Noah's Ark kind of guy. He went for the flood.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Which was the opposite, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose now
we've
got...
Does that prove or disprove?
I mean, I suppose now we've got wildfires everywhere and these weird, like, what about the Canadian?
Opposite of none of that.
What is the word for the thing that happened in Canada, like the heat sinks type thing? There must be a term for that.
Well, like the heat domes where they...
Heat domes.
Go over the... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost the opposite.
Sarah, you specifically texted me at the start of this and said, we won't go off on a tangent. It's been 10 minutes and we're talking about fucking weather.
Well... We're also contemplating the existence of God.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Let's not limit ourselves here. Would you like me to
He
ask
was quite
you...
fire and brimstone, wasn't he? So maybe he would kill millions of people just so we could have, like, so I could get drunk in my garden.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Maybe it's you. Is it your fault? Are you God? No. Did you orchestrate this,
Danny? Confirm nor deny that I am.
But yeah, I actually really enjoyed quite a lot of the pandemic. It was the first time in my life that I've not had to do lots of things, and it was great.
Yeah, yeah.
Or rather, the first time in my life where I've had a shut down, sit down, lie down situation without being like catastrophically depressed.
Yeah.
That was
new. Fair play.
And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, luckily I've never had depression or that, but I have always had that, like, I always need to be on the go, do you know what I mean? And, like, always doing something, like, and I can't ever relax. But then when that option was taken away of, like, well, there is nothing you can do at the minute, you can't go anywhere, don't leave your house, I was like, oh, this is what normal people feel like when they relax at home by themselves and have fun.
Although, I found myself scraping for things to do. Like...
Yeah.
Because I'm like that as well. I bounce around and I do thing and thing and thing. And this is how I lose recordings, is because I think I'm doing it. And then I get distracted by like a squirrel. during the pandemic as well, the guy that I was living with, he's got like serious ADHD and is like bouncing off the walls and goes from like angry to ecstatic in like 2 seconds. It's great. It was actually really entertaining to live with at that time, because we were both just kind of bouncing around all the time,
yeah, yeah,
and coming up with strange things to do. And then in the evening, just sitting and watching TV, staring blankly like into the middle distance. Like it was good. Yeah.
Fair play.
Would you like me to ask you a music related question?
I mean, yeah, crack on, like whatever you want.
So you are one member of the Mysterious Knife Club.
Mysterious Knife Club, yeah.
And
you are playing their first gig tonight.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I have observed that Knife Club are playing their first gig probably about now, I would say.
What time is it?
7 o'clock.
Yeah, I'd say.
Probably
or
on
just
like
about
half
to go
seven,
on,
8 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah,
casually
so, yeah.
Supporting Snuff. And I can't help but notice.
And just sent to press the third release.
Ooh, yeah, third release, first gig, casually supporting Snuff. Yeah, nice. Yeah. And I can't help but notice that as Knife Club are playing their first gig, that you are, in fact, sat here talking to me over the internet.
Yeah, luckily, Mark Tanner from Haste and all sorts of other bands has kindly agreed to step in while I'm on sort of paternity leave. But also, when we said, how did this start? I think I got asked to do this in 2018, what's it called, Fest? Dan asked me, and I was like, yeah, I'm up for playing bass. And I think the plan was it to just be a, you know, a recording thing, and we'd sort of one and done. And then, like, I don't know what happened. It sort of all came together, and then we started booking gigs. And I was like, I'm not going to lie, I work shifts, and I'm already in a touring band, and like, I'm not going to be able to do it. Like, I'm going to need a stand-in for certain things. But yeah, luckily Tanner's up for it. So
well, Tanner's a good sort of stand-in as well, isn't he? He's a good egg for that. But I also feel like probably one of the more complex issues of Knife Club is the geographical distance.
Oh yeah, have you noticed? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So what, your Kingsland?
We had a practice a few months back in Manchester that collectively cost us £200.
Oh my God, I remember.
Between the six of us. Because we tried, like, we do it fairly where, like, we'll have practices at various points around the country to try and spread it out. And then whoever's, you know, we'll work out the cost for everyone to get somewhere and then we'll split it. And yeah, so Dan drove up from, it was in Manchester. Oh, because we saw you after, didn't we?
But, yeah, like, we had drinks after.
Yeah,
and
Dan drove up from Hastings. Zoe got a train to Lynn and me and her drove up. Then obviously Elliot drove from Leeds. And yeah, and obviously Big Ant and Andy were already there. But yeah, collectively cost us £200.
Christ.
And that was with Zoe jumping in with me. That would have cost her £180 to get
she'd
the
have
train
gone from
to
Ipswich.
A practice. I don't...
Yeah, I mean, I would say that for a very fun project, you've created an awful lot of inconvenience for yourself.
I know. I just sort of agreed to something and then was like, yeah, that sounds... I love everyone in that band is brilliant. So I was just like, yeah, that sounds like fun. Like play some thrashy punk with my friends. Like that'd be great.
And yeah, this
like,
is meant.
Logistics was just like... I forgot that like 90% of being in a band is just admin and logistics and forgot to sort of look at that. However, I have done none of that for... It's been brilliant because this is the first time I've never had to do any organising. It's brilliant. I can just, you know, let other people do that and just jump around.
So most bands have like a band dad or a band mum, don't they, who kind of tends to organise things. Is there one in Knife Club?
I believe, yeah, I'd say it's between Andy and Dan, I think, do most of the organising.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense.
I think everyone like...
I feel like...
I do nothing. I cannot stress that enough in terms of organisation. I don't want to take any credit for that because everyone puts in a lot of effort. But like,
and you don't.
Yeah, I play bass.
That's nice.
It's
though,
been
isn't
nice.
It?
It's been so nice doing that. Like,
I feel like
I love playing it. I love I love everyone in it, and I love playing it. But like, it's nice to not have to organise anything other than getting myself to places. That's lovely.
Yeah. See, that's just fun, isn't it? Yeah, that's really good. So you. The other thing that I imagine must be a little bit weird about not playing this first run of shows, because obviously you are busy being a parent, is the fact that when Knife Club first came about, so it was a secret, wasn't it, for at least 6 months. So
yeah,
it was this big mysterious thing and no one knew who was in the band and everyone was guessing who it might be.
It was. Well, I told no one, including my wife. And then like, I can't remember, we went somewhere with everyone and everyone fucking knew. So I don't know how much it was of a secret.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that I would say that different members of Knife Club kept it more secret than others. And... of those members, you were probably the most secretive.
I'm good. Like, I'm a fucking mouthy gobshite. But, like, if someone tells me something secret, I do just keep my mouth shut and don't say anything to anyone. But, like, but yeah. No, it's good. I thought it was good. I quite enjoy winding people up and people got quite angry about it. So, it's quite funny.
Well, I don't think many people knew, but I think it kind of... certainly, I think the Manchester punk scene noticed, because you guys all came up for a practice about 4 months before you announced.
And then all turned up at a gig.
Yeah, and it was like a Garlic Bread Club gig in November, and it was like, oh, what are you doing here? From like Lynn and Hastings and Leeds and, you know, Ipswich. And but people were still too drunk to actually notice what was going on. And I remember at one point I had people, particularly when it was like ramping up and people were really interested, I had people who were like asking me, they were like, Sarah, do you know who's in Knife Club? And I was like, yes, but I've actually forgotten, because that's how I operate. I was like, I remember Andy saying to me...
I can't believe it wasn't the highest thing on your list to remember, Sarah.
I remember Andy saying to me, have you figured out who's in Knife Club yet? And I was like, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest. And also, I had this full conversation with Andy about it without clocking that Andy was asking me because he was in the band. And I was like, oh, this is you telling me that you're in Knife Club. Shit, I'm... Everything goes over my head sometimes, you know.
Yeah, fair play.
Do you ever find that, like, in some parts of life, like, you're smart in some ways and, like, absolutely useless?
Oh, yeah,
in
massively.
Others? Yeah.
I have, like, three subjects I can read, like, just unbelievably dry, boring books about that I find fascinating and nothing else. I find it incredibly difficult to read any fiction at all, even if it's really good. I have, like, two or three subjects that I'm fascinated with and everything else I couldn't care less about.
So what subjects are you most enamoured with at the moment? Or have you got any books
that
you can
recommend
for us?
Politics and economics and science, and that is it. And that has been since I was like a teenager, and then nothing else. Like, I can't read fiction. I can't read anything else, really. I don't know why.
I've had a bit of a weird obsession with economics since I was about 16. And it's something that I find really confusing to explain to people, because I think people equate economics with just money.
No, of course it's not. Like,
which
that's,
it absolutely
I think that's
isn't.
The root.
Yeah.
No, that's the root of all my economics is it's the root of all politics, isn't it? And it's the root of everything, because it's basically distribution of resources in terms of political economics, political economy. So, political economics. So, like, ultimately, for me, any political change is going to be rooted somewhere in economics.
Absolutely,
it's about redistribution of.
Often to fix a problem, potentially, if you take an economic solution, it's likely to be more effective, because you're looking at incentives and motivation and the reasons behind doing stuff. And
what I do also like, though, is just there's like it's treated as a science now, where it's completely an art, where it is just like, they, no one really knows. Like, they just go, we do that, and they go, well, hopefully that'll work. And but because it's maths, everyone pretends that that's definitely what's going to happen. Like, the basis of all our economics, the basis of all of the way we live our lives is like being rational economic beings, which we know humans are not, but they still go, well, I don't know, yeah, just probably, like, just have a go at that.
Basically, you're kind of trying to, like, quantify all human behaviour. Like,
yeah, it's, yeah, into it's numbers.
Ridiculous. I wonder if, though, like, I think, I don't know about you, we're not super different in like ages, but I was around at the time when kind of Freakonomics was particularly
yeah,
popular.
I read Freakonomics 1 and 2.
But I think like that kind of popular economics behavioral science was kind of around when I was like 16, 18, that sort of formative period. And I think that it was starting to become a little bit more like poppy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's probably influenced like my reading quite a lot.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because that, you should obviously once you get into a subject you read deeper, but like that stuff like that gets you into it, didn't it? I read like pop science books, pop economics books. That's sort of what gets you in, and then you go deeper. But stuff like that, massively influenced me. Like, but
I still read loads of stuff like that, but I also have a tendency to like pick up a book, get halfway through it, get distracted by something else, read half of that. I've got about six on at the moment. though I tell you what,
I've pretty much chain read books for my whole life, but then when the pandemic started, I just stopped it for the first time in my life. I just stopped reading.
That's
and I know exactly what it was. It was because obviously when this all started, no one knew what was going on. It was, you know, it was mad. We didn't know how bad it was going to be.
Big blah, uncertainty. Blah.
And I was checking my phone all the time of like trying to read into what was going on. And I was just on my phone constantly to a point where like it just, I didn't have a great attention span anyway. And it just destroyed. I couldn't read. And I basically just didn't read for a whole year, which I've never done before. And then I've just got back on it again. It's very odd. Very odd.
I almost had exactly the opposite experience. I find that, I don't know, the amount that I'm reading directly correlates with like my mental health and how well I'm feeling. If I'm having a bad time, I just can't read. If I'm having a good time, or it's almost like it's a sign like if I want to feel better, if I have to like make myself read and kind of get back into it. So I go through phases of like voraciously consuming books and then periods where like I can't read more than two paragraphs. And
I definitely think that was similar. Like I didn't consciously feel like, you know, I was having a bad time mentally, but I definitely feel like it was to do with sort of that internal fight or flight thing. Cause it was like, right, there's this danger outside that also you can't see this thing that's going to attack you, but also potentially you could get it and die. Cause I've got asthma as well. So like when it first kicked off and I work, you know, directly frontline NHS worker. So I was like, oh, if I get this, when it first came out, it was like asthma, diabetes. And I was like, oh shit, I could die. Like this is really bad. Yeah. So like, I reckon it was that like internally it was like that constant like I need to keep up to date with what's going on, and that's why I couldn't read. I couldn't focus long enough.
Well, I think you mentioned fight and flight there. It's like fight, flight, freeze as well. You can go into a certain amount of shutdown.
Panic,
if you can't handle everything that's coming at you. And you're right,
if you're
hyperstimulated by all that news that you're reading, then of course it makes sense that your other cognitive processes aren't gonna like be on par with normal.
Yeah, definitely.
It was really stressful, like really, really stressful. Although I did spend a lot of it like noodling about enjoying myself. I was going to say, I had the opposite experience where it got to the beginning of the pandemic and I just didn't really know what to do with myself. I did like some decorating and I watched an absolutely absurd amount of Netflix. But I also, you must have in your house the stack of books that never gets read.
Oh, right? I've got a shelf,
I read that book. I read the whole stack. I went through the whole damn thing. I read something like 52 books in 4 months. Like
fucking hell.
Yeah, and I was like,
This is ridiculous.
How have I managed that? Like
were you even taking that in? Were you just skim reading?
I don't know. Some of them maybe a little bit both, but I found as well my reading habits changed a bit. Normally I get my books from the library around the corner, or I'll get my books from like charity shops and stuff like that. And the thing is that in those circumstances, you're looking at quite a limited selection and then picking what you'd like from that selection.
Out of that thing,
Because we couldn't go to the shops and we couldn't go to the library, I ran out of books. And then I was like, what do I want to read? Which was a whole different way of looking at it, you know?
Yeah.
For the first time in my life, I went and bought like full price books from Blackwell's. ordered books online and then got to actually choose the topics that I wanted to read about. And yeah, it was weird and great and I had a wonderful time. And then in November, I went and got myself like a work from home job that's really like demanding intellectually. And
yeah,
I stopped reading immediately.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
And I've managed to get myself back into it now by like a really almost like enforced routine of reading in the morning before work and then reading before I go to bed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so weird how it can come and go.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I had the exact, as I say, that's the exact experience I had. Like I just stopped reading and then, yeah, just come back again.
I wonder what everyone else has done. Have you been to any gigs yet now that things are back?
No, because with my wife being pregnant, she didn't, because at first they were saying pregnant women don't get the jab. Then they were, so I've been trying to limit sort of everything, you know, because she wasn't jabbed. She's had the first one now. So yeah, I've been trying to limit everything and I'm still like, I'm not, you know, passing judgment. I know it's legal to do it, but it's like, we're not out of this yet.
My
cousin lives in New Zealand. They're locked down again. Like Australia.
Yeah, they had
down.
One
like,
case.
So many countries are fully locking down and like America and UK have just gone, fuck it. Like just open it up. Everyone get it. I'm not, you know, I'm not judging anyone for going. I get it. But like, I'm still like,
I think
we're not through this yet.
I think some healthy caution is absolutely right. Sort of wound up at one gig almost by accident. Like I hadn't really planned on going and then I just seemed to be there. And that felt a bit
classic.
That happens, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then after that, I went to one gig that I had planned to go to and I spent quite a lot of it outside because I was a bit like, I don't really want to be. And I know you're supposed to watch the bands, but, you know, there's a comfort level and there's gigs happening this weekend and there's a part of me that just like obviously I want to see bands and stuff, but actually I don't necessarily want to go out to one of the gigs this weekend because I've just got this like bad feeling about it.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is a weird one because like, people are getting COVID, but if you're double jabbed, like I guess the idea is obviously that it's not fine to get COVID, but like the hope is that because you're double jabbed, you're not going to end up in hospital and all of that. So
yeah,
I get
it should
it,
be less.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
It should be less problematic. Yeah,
our first gig back isn't till mid-October. Hopefully that will happen. Hopefully there isn't another lockdown. It doesn't look like it's going to be. But
I was reading about it this morning. There was an article in the BBC about it, talking about how vaccine efficacy reduces after 5 to 6 months. So. So AstraZeneca, it's coming out at around 88% effectiveness right at the start, like once you've had it after the first 2 weeks. But then after 5 or 6 months, it reduces to something like 72%. And also, you know, 56% of facts are made up on the spot. but I've got a weird memory for numbers and I think that's about the right amount. And I'm sort of thinking that makes a lot of sense. But I also just think people need to be aware of it. And at the moment, it's the younger age group who are potentially more at risk and who haven't been vaccinated or who are going out.
Yeah, sure.
But by the time we get into the autumn, it might be slightly the older, more vulnerable generation who start picking it up again. And then, you know, I'm quite prepared to have some stuff cancelled again. Like, also, I enjoyed lockdown quite a lot and I'm kind of okay with it happening again.
I get it because, like, we're joking and saying, like, we enjoyed it. So I get it if people didn't. And like,
I mean, don't get me wrong. The third one, I was depressed as fuck. It was horrible.
The one that they cancelled Christmas and then like just didn't stop until like June. That was like, come on, fuck me.
No, that was awful. Yeah, particularly the cancelling Christmas bit. Like,
yeah.
Not that and I give a fuck about
Tories.
Christmas.
He literally fucking nothing. They haven't done anything in the polls. He literally just completely just went back on it. Absolutely. 3 days before was going, oh, of course, we're not going to cancel Christmas, blah, blah, blah. And then just did and nothing happens. But let's not get into that. But yeah, I think like with... I mean, we had colleagues die and we had like colleagues that are like, will never go back to normal. They got long COVID. They were in, you know, comas, intensive care and everything. And it was fucked. Like, we directly saw all the dead people. It was fucking horrible.
That's horrendous.
Yeah. But also, this is great. King's Lynn Hospital's roof is caving in and has collapsed in certain positions. And they had to do a risk assessment. You are more likely to die from the roof caving in than COVID currently.
Isn't that the ITU reassuring?
And because we've had 10 years of austerity, they're still not doing anything about it. So the roof is currently collapsing. The reason we had to be in hospital with my wife being induced It's because they had to limit the baby unit because the roof's collapsing. It just, and nothing's happening. They've just, nothing is getting done.
That is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
It's mental, isn't it?
So are they looking at like fundraising locally and things like that?
Nope. Or? They're getting 20 what? Million, which is nowhere near enough. So basically, Lynn Hospital was built in like the late 60s with a shelf, because back in the day, they used to build infrastructure, obviously, but with a shelf life of 25 years was meant to last. So it's now 2021 and it's still going. It has flat roofs, which obviously just store rain. And yeah, and so and obviously Lynn's population has fucking ballooned since then.
Yeah, massively increased.
And so like it's nowhere near big enough, but it's also, because we're in the arse end of nowhere, it's an hour, everywhere else, an hour to get to the closest hospital. So it has to stay open because otherwise people will die, like without blue light. You know, even on blue lights, you can only get to the closest, close ones are like Cambridge, Norwich and all this.
Christ,
so
that's a
we
long
have
way.
To keep this hospital open. They refuse to fund it. It's falling apart. It's full of asbestos. It's falling, like the roof is literally caving in and just nothing is happening. Corbyn came to Lynn. He was the only politician that came to speak. No, a local MP didn't come to speak to anyone. Like nothing is happening. And it proved like, this proves to me what I've thought for fucking years, which is just like that this is the 2008 should have been the end of this and it wasn't. And now we're just living in this weird reality where everything is slowly, this is a slow decline. Everyone, nothing has changed. And everyone's like, well, we don't know what to do. And then like, we're just sort of slowly watching things collapse and people go, well, something will happen. They'll do something.
And no,
they won't do anything. Grenfell is still going on. Nothing is happening. They are not coming to save us anymore. They know that this is fucked. Like, they know this is declining and it's just slowly, this is a slow managed decline now.
Absolutely.
We're running out of food and nothing is happening. Like, they're not, nothing is happening.
Well, it's that sort of accountability, isn't it? You almost expect someone else to come and fix it for you. And then,
yeah. And they've seen now that, so obviously when the Soviet Union was here, as fucked as I was, I'm not here fucking standing for the Soviet Union, but like as fucked as that was, there was an alternative where like they had to, like the West had to put up something of going like, we offer you better than that, don't defect the Soviet. Since that fell, what are you going to do? Like, they're just, yeah, like there's no accountability to the government anymore, is there? They can do anything. Nothing happens if they do nothing. Nothing happens.
Absolutely. So, not I mean, also with the current government, and actually I don't completely disagree with this, but obviously I remember for years and years and years, you seem to have the second a politician like did the smallest thing, they would resign.
Yeah,
right,
had an
and
affair or
in the current
whatever,
government,
yeah.
That isn't happening, but I think it's gone a little bit overboard now in the opposite direction.
Maybe.
I do think it's right. I don't think that people should have to resign from their jobs for having an affair or doing something like dirty. I don't know. I don't give a fuck what they do in their personal lives. It doesn't like make any difference to what they do. I mean, maybe it does, but I don't think it does. Like, I just think if you really fuck up at work...
Yeah. There should be some fucking consequences.
Yeah, right.
When people are literally dying... Like every step of the way, he could have done all these throughout the pandemic. Every step of the way, it was late and more people, like literally more people died because of his fuck ups.
Yeah, it's just gross fucking incompetence. And the problem is, though, that we can see this and it's like, you know, things with like the, you know, environmental crisis, wars in different countries, everything that's happening in Afghanistan right now. Like we can all agree that there's a problem and that something is wrong, but there are different views on how we can fix it and we can't agree.
Yeah.
On those solutions, which is why nothing's fucking happening. Like,
what I don't get is they have apps, like they could do whatever the fuck they want because they have such a majority. They could do anything they want. There is nothing any of us could do now to stop them doing pretty much anything, because anything they put forward, they can just vote through, and they're not doing it because they've run. I mean, that's the whole thesis of Adam Curtis's new documentaries, isn't it? It's
of
like
course.
Basically everyone's just run out of ideas. We don't know what. Like, no one knows what to do. 2008 was like, right, this system doesn't work, clearly. There was a massive fucking... Again, it goes back to economics. No one saw that coming. In the exact same way, no one... People, there were whole disciplines that studied Sovietology and no one saw the Soviet Union falling. Like, all the secret services were studying... Like, they had spies in there and no one saw it coming. And then one day it was just like, all right, it doesn't exist now.
It's done.
And that's gone. And it's the same with 2008. It was like, oh, no, that will never... You know, that will never happen. People always pay their mortgages, not thinking like, oh, we're just leveraging a load of people that can't pay debt.
Yep.
And they were like, oh, yeah, it's fucked. But then also... There was nothing waiting in the wings where, like, really, there should have been a left-wing alternative to go, right, your system's fucked. We've got something, and we didn't have that. And now we're just living in this weird, I don't even know what we live under anymore. It's not capitalism. It's not for the rich people because we just print money. And they can fail all they want, and there's no consequences. So, like, just every step of the way. There's no, the whole point of their theory of you know, their political theory is capitalism works because there's, you know, if you fail, you're wiped out and someone else takes your place. But that doesn't happen now.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Fail and they just keep going. So what the fuck is this? What do we live under now? I don't know. I don't know what the fuck this is.
Well, on like a sort of very, very smaller level as well, it's like capitalism and debt is the thing there as well. Like if you hit bankruptcy, you can still continue beyond that, whether that's for a business or an individual. And that just doesn't quite make sense. There's always this
kind of
weird safety net in place. And then people are encouraged to dive further and further into it as well.
Yeah. That's what's great about like neoclassical economics. It's just that like they just don't take into account money or debt into the theory. They're just like, well, it cancels each other out. And it's like, no, like that's not true. Like just that's not how it works. But yeah, it's madness, isn't it? This is the sort of shit that flies around my head every day, and this is why I'm permanently angry.
Well, I mean, but I can understand that. That's why I'm permanently confused by things as well. Or I think one of the reasons that I get distracted so often, and one of the things that links in with economics and all that kind of thing, is that quite often I look at something and I just think, how does that work?
Yeah,
and if I don't understand it, I want to understand how it works.
That's how I've always been as a kid. I was really curious. And then like, as I got to a teenager, it was like, for me, it's like always like society stuff and like looking at stuff and going, yeah, why is this happening? Like, how does housing work? So like I was born in military quarters in Germany. Then
really?
My parents divorced. So I was like moved to England. I was homeless for a year in emergency accommodation in a B&B. And then me and my mum got council flat. And then we moved to Norfolk and lived in RAF quarters then. So I've been through the spectrum of housing you can have, from military, homeless, council housing, normal housing, blah blah.
That but is like, a ridiculously interesting start in the world.
Like the first 10 years, my life's been relatively boring since the age of 10. But before 10, my life was pretty fucking chaotic. but like, I look at housing and just think like, well, how does that work? Like, how does that work on a society level? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I mean. That's the massive one as well. Like housing. Like what is that going to mean when they haven't built council housing for 40 odd years? And like, I don't know if you've seen recently, like Lloyds are now buying up like I think it was 500,000 houses. They want to be the biggest landlord in the UK. And it's like,
yeah,
well, then
so the company that you then get your mortgages from is the one.
Exactly.
Who owns the,
what does that mean?
Well.
So you the person lending you your money is now outbidding you for a house.
Yeah. That's not okay.
What the fuck does that mean?
But then you've got things like the sort of Competitions and Markets Authority, and you sort of feel like they ought to get involved in that, but that isn't their job. And whose job is that?
Well, you know what it's heading towards, because everyone's like, oh, well, the housing market will crash. It won't. It will be rich people buying it up and renting it out, and you will just rent forever. And like,
it'll just be this absurd oligarchy where you're constantly paying into other people's coffers.
And it will be just feudalism. It'll be like a Charles Dickens novel, but with mobile phones.
Well, isn't that what we've always wanted? It's not what I've always wanted.
The freedom.
I've always kind of wanted to live in like Kurt Vonnegut novel, I reckon. That would probably be my my route. but that's it. You're kind of constantly surrounded by these things which you're sort of challenged by and that make you angry. And the thing is, though, that's what makes you an interesting and inquisitive person. That's a good thing. But do you ever wish that you just weren't like that?
Yeah, massively. I wish I never got into punk, and I wish I never got into like politics or anything, and just stopped questioning anything, because people are happy and like fair fucking play to them. Like because of my job and stuff, I don't even know how many dead people I've seen. I've seen a lot of dead people.
Christ.
And like, I don't think any of them think, oh, I wish I don't think they went to the grave thinking, I wish I was angrier at the economic system. Like they go to the grave thinking, I wish I had a happier life. And like, I'm just firmly, there's always a low level burning anger in me, because I'm just like, I either don't understand this thing or I just think this thing is shit. And I just think like, God, imagine how happy I'd be if I just didn't give a shit about any of this.
But you can't
turn it back. Me and Bob will always talk about this. When we first met, because, you know, we were both like young and activist-y and lefty and all that. And he was like, just imagine how much happier you'd be if you just didn't give a shit. But you also can't go back. Once you've gone there, you're like, oh, well, I know that now, and I can't not know that.
Yeah, so I can't unknow that now.
Here we go. I'm
like,
stuck in this now.
I found like it definitely changes now in the way that we consume media and stuff like that. Like,
huge.
I watch TikTok a lot, right? And that is 15 second chunks of random information. Imagine how many 15 second chunks of completely disparate information that I can take in like a 10 minute slot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I hear these odd little facts. And the other day I watched one and it was just a 15 second video about a guy who'd put a camera on his cat, and his cat, who was an indoor cat, he had seen that they spent most of their time looking out of the windows. And what that probably meant was their cat really wanted to be outside.
Yeah.
Right? And I was like,
that's incredibly sad.
I'm looking at my indoor cat. I was looking at my indoor cat, and now every time she stands in the fucking window, as she is right now,
yeah, I could see
it. I'm just like, oh shit, you want to go outside, don't you? And I'm like, oh no, I'm a bad cat parent. Like, cat parent? I don't like cat parent, by the way. That's the term that I really dislike. We're housemates.
Okay. okay.
She's the fluffier of the housemates, and I pay them, you know, pay for everything.
Yeah, you do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
She just
lolls about and gives me cuddles. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, fair play. I mean, she's got a pretty good setup there, isn't she? Like,
oh, yeah, she's
for free. Gets fed.
Fed, biscuits, cuddles, toys, everything that she wants, basically.
Yeah,
and she's an annoying little fuck who just sort of stands in the way when I'm trying to do stuff. And I love that about her. Anyway, enough about the cat. No one else wants to hear about that.
I mean, I don't think anyone else wanted to hear about economics either, did they? But that's what they've got.
Well, that's one of the funny things about what I've ended up with now, is because I, like, for years kind of was really, really interested in economics, read a lot about it, thought about doing it at university, but didn't really do the whole university thing because I can't commit to anything for 3 years at a time.
Yep, exactly the same.
Yes. And then I continued that interest, and then in November, I now work for an economics consultancy.
Oh, nice.
Right.
How's that going?
Quite well, really. Yeah. It's quite good. And everyone else on my team has like a doctorate in economics. And I'm over here and I've read Super Freakonomics twice, you know, that's the level. And
how did you land that job then?
Well, I already
did. You need qualifications, or was it a? yes,
yes, but I don't have any. Apparently, I smashed it at the interview. That was
fair
how
play.
I got that job. Well, I've got experience in like behavioral economics from doing like market research, and I basically went to them and went, "Hello, I can do this," and I also fully in my cover letter said I am personally very interested in economics, even though I'm not qualified in it.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is how I got the job. Reading for economics got me a job.
You're probably going to be more into it than someone that's just had to sit through 3 years of an economics degree, though, aren't you? You're like going to be up for it and like, oh, I want to learn this. They're going to be like, I cannot be fucking arsed with this.
Yeah, fully. Like, I'm enthusiastic so you're gonna be like, about it.
You'll be a great employee.
Yeah, and in our first week or so, I started a bit before Christmas, and there were loads of different like events and stuff going around, but it was in COVID, so all of it was happening online. And in the first week, they went, well, Sarah, I'm not sure if you're going to be interested in this, but we've booked the whole team tickets to watch an online event of the only economist comedian in the world. And I was like, what
right, what does that mean? What?
Yeah, it's an economist jokes. And he does stand-up comedy specifically about economics, and I went, yeah, all right, and I loved it. It was hilarious.
What's his name?
I can't think. This was ages ago, mate. I'll put it in the I'll put a link in the show notes if you want.
For all the people that be interested in that, which will be me and you.
Yeah, but no, it was genuinely funny. But also, it gave me that kind of. Sometimes it gives me a really good feeling because all these people are talking about, you know, quite serious, like, "Hello, I've done a degree" things, and I know what they're talking about. It's great. Surely this is proof that my slightly unconventional, like, fuck up of a life actually sort of made sense in some kind of weird way.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, you've got the job and you're doing it. So clearly, you know, clearly no one should ever go to uni and you should just blag your way through life.
I mean, that has been my view for many years.
I mean, you haven't got 50 grand worth of debt either, have you? So
no, it's great. That's another thing. Imagine there's so many different debts, like student debt and mortgages are so accepted and like acceptable, aren't they? And I really, really dislike it.
My thing was like, because I'd done well in school until year nine when I started playing music and dropped. I was in top set, then I dropped in every subject in 1 year to set two in every subject.
Punk rock and, ruined my life.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, I don't need anything because I'm just going to be in a punk band. So why would I need anything else? But I'd done all right. I did no revision at GCSEs and got like C's and stuff. So I'd done all right. But I was like, well, I'll just be in a band and then I'll go to uni later in life and stuff. And then, in 2010, they were like, oh yeah, it's now 10 grand a year to go to uni. And I was like, oh, that's the end of that then. That will never happen. And then like one of our cousins now, he's just going to uni and I'm like, fuck me. So he's like, so he's 18. He's going to leave uni with what, 50, 60 grand worth of debt. Then he's, you know, at some point probably going to want to buy a house. So that's going to be a minimum of another 150. So before he's even left, like, obviously he's not going to buy a house straight out of uni, but like, you know, in theory, he's going to want to buy a house. So he's looking at like 200 grand worth of debt.
Yeah.
Before he's even done anything with his fucking life.
It's ridiculous.
Just to
it?
Find shelter and an education.
But also, don't you think that starting off life like that or beginning adult life with that much debt, does that not make you think that other types of debt are more acceptable as well? So do you think that, you know, it's almost encouraging this world in which you spend beyond your means in order to have the things that you want? But that's just like this horrible consumerist cycle.
Yep.
You know, and I understand
terrible
that
idea.
If people are in a difficult position, that's sometimes the only option. But I think that...
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, and some debt can be good. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can use debt for good and invest, you know, for example, a really basic example would be to take on... You can either buy a £300 car that's going to cost loads of fucking money every month because it breaks down all the time, or you can take a loan, buy a decent car that will last longer, slowly pay it off. That's, you know, you invest in an asset or whatever. But like, yeah, this is just like... There's no guarantee you're going to get a good job out of this 60 grand.
Yeah.
And I read a really good book called Viking Economics, which is about the Scandinavian economic model. Mm. Now, they have a different setup because it's, you know, they have oil, they're a small country and quite homogenous and all of that. But like they, at any point in some of those countries, you can just go back to uni for free and they will pay you a wage to go to uni. So if you may be a surgeon for 20 years and then go, I'm sick of surgery, I want to go be... I don't know, a programmer, they'll go, yep, fair enough, drop out, go to uni for 3 years, be a programmer now, because if you want to do it. Whereas here, we're like, right, pick what you want to do at 14, and you can never deviate from that, and also you're going to leave with 60 grand worth of debt. So don't try and retrain, because you're already in 60 grand worth of debt. And never, if you drop out halfway through, you've still got the debt.
It's ridiculous, but not just because of people's, you know, like the fact that it used to be that you would stick in the same job for 45 years of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would just sit there and fester. But now people jump from thing to thing to thing. Everyone's got like side hustles and shit like that. Everyone's freelancing. Yeah. We've got the gig economy.
God, I hate that.
But more than that, it's also the world changes. Jobs change. Yeah. Jobs that were popular 10 years ago are now obsolete. You know, coding didn't exist when we were in school. Like,
no.
And now kids are taught that at an early age. And it's like, you should be able to retrain. That should be, that makes
also,
your
you
economy
be
more feasible as well. You know,
exactly. Yes. And you will be better at a job if you don't fucking hate going in every day.
Absolutely.
You've done it for 20 years.
But also, one of the things that would make you like your job more is having the freedom to leave and knowing that you would have the comfort and safety of being able to leave, because then you're making an active choice to continue in that job and you're not just having to do it because you need the money to live.
Absolutely. It's a really good book called Women Have Better Sex Under Socialism, which is kind of that argument for feminism, which is like women are better off if they have the economic needs to leave a relationship or leave a situation and can support themselves. That is much, you know, that's fuck, you know, doing little days in the workplace, give them better wages, like make sure that women are remunerated properly and they will be much happier and much freer because they will be able to leave their partner or whatever.
Absolutely. Or like, it's all about freedom of choice. You know, that's why I can't think what the word is for it, not living wage, you know, the universal wage that goes to every single person.
Universal basic income,
that
UBI,
is why that would work. It's because it opens up the freedom of choice to people.
Yeah. I've heard some interesting arguments around that where you can have universal basic income or universal basic services. So you'd have like the Nordic model would be more like they pay lots of tax. So I don't know if you've ever been anywhere, but like everything's expensive there to us, but they get like the free education, they get like free transit and all that kind of stuff. Or because obviously universal basic income, I don't really know where I stand on it, but the arguments for and against it are, the arguments against it is like it's quite a capitalist approach where you take away all other benefits, and then like, so you have choice, but it's like lots of people need support as well as choice. Do you know what I mean?
But yeah, I get it.
Like, I just, what I find the most mad, like, you can get into whether Corbyn was good or bad or whatever, but like the weird thing I have now with like people where like someone will propose the 4-day week and they're like, well, how could that possibly work? And it's like, 40 hours doesn't come from God. Do you know what I mean? Like, it does not, like, it's not a hard and fast scientific rule that you have to work 40 hours a week. You used to work 80 hours a week. We used to send 3-year-olds down mines. Like,
yes, things
change.
And
we realised that was a shit idea.
Yeah.
And people fought and died for your right not to do it. The idea of a 40-hour work week doesn't have to be this way. Like, it doesn't. And that was like, that was Keynes's thing, wasn't it? In the 30s, he was like, oh, by the year 2000, our biggest problem will be how to spend time, because we'll be doing, how to spend our leisure time, because we'll all be working 3 days a week. And it's like, absolutely not. We're still fucking working 40 hours a week.
But
and if you bring it up,
well,
people are like,
if you wanted to,
how would I do it?
If you wanted to boost a lot of industries in the economy, giving people more leisure time works really well.
Oh, massively.
Because people and spend during their leisure time.
Let's be fucking honest. Most people are not productive for 40 hours a week.
The
vast majority of jobs in society could either be done away with because they're fucking pointless, or could, like, if you shrunk them down to 3 days a week and worked intensely, you could still get the work done. You're like, so much time is just wasted in human, like, human time is wasted just doing, because you have to be there for 8 hours. Not these are the jobs that need to be done. You have to be here for 8 hours. So,
yes, it's ridiculous.
Or in my case, 12. But like, for the normal 9 to 5, you have to be here for 8 hours regardless of whether you're doing anything. So you just sit there and fucking do nothing.
You just fuck about for a bit, don't you? I spend a lot of time discussing with one of my colleagues who, let's say we're both the youngest people in the team, right? And we're, you know, in our early 30s, and we just chat a lot because everyone else is sort of at this different echelon of levels to us. and he often comes up with little statistics and things like that. But he read a piece earlier in the week saying that the level of productivity expected normally within an hour is around 40%.
Right. So,
and the rest of the time you're kind of like looking at Facebook and stuff, and
yeah.
Or in my case, like doing laundry, using my phone, other things, staring out the window, looking at plants, getting confused, finding a data problem that has nothing to do with the goal of the project that I'm working on, but I found it is interesting and I need to fix it, right?
Now I need to pull this thread and see where this goes.
So many threads. Help
Look
me.
At this shiny thing.
Yeah. And I thought about that and I thought, do you know what? I reckon I hit at least 55% productivity, but it's done in bursts. I do it in sprints. I'll be 90% and then 10%. There's like no middle ground for me. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. But I'll tell you what. So one of the things I've been working on recently has been something called the Green Recovery Plan, which is an initiative that the government's come up with to help people or businesses recover from COVID in a more environmentally friendly way. So it's a really positive look at affecting change out of the pandemic. So rather than just getting all of these bad things, using it as an opportunity to make some changes and do things
to pivot,
differently.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, pivot. Yes. it's an opportunity. And I spent quite a lot of time last year working on this green recovery program for a couple of water companies as part of my job. But I swear this is going to relate to something in a sec.
I'm going somewhere with this.
Is it, right? And I've been wanting to explain this on the podcast because I need to tell the punk scene this, and I can't like just talk to
tell
people
me.
About it, right?
I am actually genuinely interested.
It's interesting, right? But the fact that they're like, as I say, water companies and things like that are doing this to research to try and understand what they can do differently after the pandemic and what changes they can make, that makes me think, well, if they're doing this kind of once you know better, do better approach, why can't we also do that for all the shit at gigs? Right?
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Look, it's come back to the punk scene.
Nice, tied it in. Sweet.
But see, I've got this thing, right? Like that I wrote an article recently about how I think that representation is maybe still not as good as it fucking should be. Like, I feel like it's gone backwards a little bit from where we were before the pandemic. And that's partly with women, partly with people of colour, different other groups and things like that. I feel like there is less representation on stage. It's a lot of guys, right?
Yeah, fair play.
But also around safety at shows. Around things like I put out a thing today basically saying like, what do you think we could do at gigs to make people who are neurodivergent more comfortable and make them feel more included? So that could be things like helping with any kind of sensory challenges, having like earplugs, not having strobe lights, you know, having alcohol-free options and stuff like that, having a quiet space. And I'm just thinking, surely we've had this 18-month break where none of the venues have been open. when no one's been at a gig. Surely that's a pause to try and go, rather than going back to what we were like before, surely we can be better than that. I feel like I want to have a green recovery
fair play.
The punk scene. And I don't know what that fucking looks like, but I've gotten a bee under my bonnet about it and I'm really excited about it. And I've been writing loads about it and then not finishing any articles and not doing anything with it because I have the attention span of a gnat.
No, that sounds good. Yeah, that sounds interesting for sure.
I do have excitement though.
Yeah. No, that's good. That sounds interesting. It's hard, isn't it? Because it is like, like I think I told you the other day, like my brother has Asperger's syndrome. I think it all comes under the umbrella ASD now, but yeah.
But it's different. Well, it's, I think a sort of like spectrum disorder now, isn't it? ASD, well, but yeah. I associate Asperger's with, it's like not necessarily high functioning, but like high intellect.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
But yeah, so, you know, I remember, like, the reason I went to a certain high school was because he's a couple of years older than me, and that had a better, I don't know if special needs area. I don't know if it's still called that, but that's what it was at the time.
I wonder if, and so, I think that has changed, but I don't know what the language is now.
I don't know. So because he was already going there, I went there. I didn't go to the local high school. I went to one we had to drive to because he needed extra, you know, teaching and stuff. So, I mean, that's something that's always, like, been in my life, that kind of stuff. But it's I love the passion of it. I just like in terms of like quiet spaces and stuff, it can be hard because obviously being in the punk scene, we don't have a lot of choice of venues in terms
of architecture
of like actual space,
to be honest. The fact
definitely
that
earplugs, I think earplugs are massive. Like, anyone, if you go to gigs, you should be wearing fucking earplugs. I've bought one. You don't have to wear the foam ones, you can get like decent ones where you can still hear everything, but like I started getting tinnitus little bits when I was like, fuck that, straight away, just straight on earplugs. Yeah. And it hasn't come back since then because it's like, once your hearing goes, it goes. It's never comes back. So if you love music, you need to think about it. And I know it's not cool or whatever, but like, fuck
that. I think it is cool.
If you want to continue, enjoying music, you need to be able to fucking hear it.
Like, I know so many older blokes that like,
yeah, I remember like, growing up, like some of my mates' dads was in bands and stuff, and like the drummer just couldn't hear any high frequencies because he'd been around cymbals so long that like all he could hear was bass at that point in his life. He's in his like 50s or whatever, but imagine that. Imagine just not being able to hear high frequencies at all.
Yeah, it's like, horrendous.
Your ears are just fucked.
But that's not cool. Wearing earplugs is cool, but I absolutely think that all venues should provide them, partly to normalize it and make it seem just like a regular thing that you would do.
Yeah.
But also, because A, people forget them. B, you might not know that you were going to a gig. I've had times where I've been like searching around for a pharmacy to try and get some earplugs before the show. I now, like, there's definitely been festivals I've gone to where I've had like a little pack of them to give out to my friends because they're like, oh shit, I forgot my earplugs.
I know, but also, that, Pirate Studio. Oh, sorry, yeah.
The canisters that you get them in, you know, the little ones that you put on your keychain, or those.
Meant NOS canisters then.
No, that's a different type of hearing loss. Is that, but you know the little canisters that you get on your keychain, you put your earplugs in. Yeah. Right, so I've got a problem where every fucking time I will drop them on the floor, and that will invariably be a sticky beer-covered venue floor, and then I have to put that in my ear. So, free earplugs at gigs, please.
Yeah, fair play.
I
know at Pirate Practice Studios, the ones that don't have people at and that, they just have these dispensers on the walls with free earplugs, endless supply of them. I'm assuming like foam earplugs can't cost that much. A lot of places in Europe have them. That's fair. It's relatively standard in Europe that there's free earplugs.
Yeah, I mean, if you were thinking
about...
But then
Europe seemed to do everything better than us in terms of live music, so...
But imagine if you were on, like, a work site with any kind of heavy machinery or anything loud.
Yeah, free
like
then,
the decibel level that you'd be working at would be high. Well, probably comparable to gigs in many ways. So surely it should be, like, a safety requirement.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, I get all my safety gear at work provided for me.
Your PPE,
My PPE, let's not.
No, I'm not talking about
that. Was literally the official level of PPE we needed went up and down depending on how much stock we had. And it was like, do you think I'm fucking thick? Like, you're going, today you're like, oh no, you don't need a mask. I'm like, oh, it's convenient we don't need a mask when you've run out of masks. And then like when they come back in stock, you're like, oh no, you need a mask. It's definitely important you need a mask. Well, all right. So what's going on here then?
I can't even imagine how like that must have been. Like kind of frontline NHS end of things.
It was very irritating.
Yeah.
It's more that like people, I'd rather they just went, look, we fucked this up. and you haven't got any PPE, then just lying, like going, do you think I'm fucking stupid? Like, obviously I know we need it and you don't have it. Just be honest with me. You've fucked it up, haven't you?
Yeah, but surely that would be better because all of us were going, you fucking incompetent fools.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if they'd have gone, there's a national PPE shortage, there's a global pandemic on, we can't get the PPE because there's a global pandemic on. I feel like that is a reasonable explanation. And I'm not saying it's good that we ran out, but I feel like I would have felt some slight sympathy for them because, you know, imagine the number of things that got cancelled, delayed, or that people gave excuses for where the excuse was, there's a pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that was...
That's a legitimate reason.
Yeah, like I would have, if they'd have said, we can't get PPE because there's a pandemic on, I would have gone, oh, all right, well... It's not good, but okay. But instead of pretending that it was fine, like,
but that just adds to the weirdness of our situation. That's what, like, hyper-normalisation, not to big up Adam Curtis again, but, like, it, you know, the people at the top are lying. We know they're lying, and they know we know they're lying, but we all carry on as if, like, this is fucking normal, when it's just like, why lie? We all know you're lying. Like, everyone knows you're lying.
Yeah.
This isn't... It just adds to this weird sense of reality at the minute where you're just like, I don't know what the fuck anything is.
No, and there's a certain, like, I feel like time has changed as well. Like, I'm sure it was what Piper said to me another week. He was like, oh yeah, this last year's been like, it's been a week, hasn't it?
Like, yeah.
Just like,
I have no idea. I last played a gig 18 months ago. That's the longest I've gone ever in playing a gig. And like, I'm just like, what? I don't know anymore. I don't know. Something that happened like 9 months ago, which is the best part of a year, just feels like, oh, that was only a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? I'm like, you're a whole year older now.
Well, we were saying this before, that in like the kind of our end of the punk scene, the community or whatever, like we measure our time through gigs, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Like I don't think that, you know, like, I won't think to myself, oh, I've not seen Danny since like X many months ago. I would have been like, oh, I last saw Danny at Conrad Fest or whatever that was.
Yeah,
and I'll work out when that was because I know that Conrad Fest is in July, right? I don't think of time. I think of gigs or events or something. And just, yeah, I don't know. I've lost all concept of reality, I think. Like, it's become a very, it's become a very confusing time.
Am I real? Do I exist?
I don't think that was helped by, I definitely feel like there was this kind of resurgence of nostalgia through part of the pandemic as well, like listening to like Limp Bizkit for a bit, that happened. There was a period in November or so when Channel 4 put Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel and the OC and stuff.
Did you go back to being 13 again?
But it wasn't just me. Like, everyone seemed to be watching it. It's almost like I went and watched that because my friends were all watching it. And then it was like, oh my God, this is like being, at my parents' house. I used to watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer before I had my tea.
Nice, like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking, this is fucking weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've lost all concept of everything.
Have a bit of an existential crisis.
Yeah. And on that note...
See ya.
I feel for the professionalism. I I ought to ask what's happening with Faintest Idea.
Oh yeah, I forgot this is a music podcast.
You said to me earlier, I was like, I've made a couple of notes and I've made like two notes, and you were like, oh, what is that, Knife Club and Faintest Idea? And I was like, oh shit, I've not put Faintest Idea on.
Band. Things are really good, and it's like, we obviously spent fucking years touring and, you know, putting in the grind and basing our lives around touring, so having like 0-hour contract jobs and doing all that. I realised that at the start of the pandemic we couldn't gig, so I posted more on Instagram, and we seem to have done better since just posting more on Instagram and not playing gigs than we have done for years, which is horrendously depressing but also good. But things are very good. We've got
that makes me kind of angry.
Oh yeah, it's so bad. Well, it's good for us because like good things are happening, but it's also like, oh right, cool. So could have just stayed on 0 hours for 12 years. So we're bang in the middle of recording a new album, which is sounding very, very good. I'm very excited about this.
It's tasty.
It's like everything we've done, but just turned up a notch. It's very
nice.
Good.
Okay, that sounds.
I'm very
good.
Excited about that. So we're halfway through that. And then, we've got some stuff to announce, which I don't want to announce yet, but you will hear about, which where it's getting released in certain places, which will be very cool. So it's all going well. We've got some gigs. What have we got? So we've got Pook Out Festival party thing in October with JB, Rochambeau and Eat Defeat and some others.
Eat the Evidence. Cool.
Eat the Evidence, sorry, yeah. Not Eat Defeat. Eat the Evidence and...
Redeeming,
that's it, yeah. It's Pook's band, isn't it? He's putting it on. Well, and then we got a Garlic Bread Club in November. And
oh,
then
have you now?
Yeah, The Underworld in December. Ooh. And a Hometown one. And then, yeah. So currently, yeah. So we're currently banging the middle of the album and it is very exciting. But I can't release it yet. But there is good things coming.
I don't want to excite you, but I think I may also be making an appearance at one of those gigs.
Of course you will. You were one of the people that, like, there's been a few around the punk scene that, like, I met through gigs and I just, for years, had no idea where you were actually from because you would just pop up at random places. Like, all right, Sarah's here. Yeah. You don't really have a thick accent of anywhere either. So, like, I couldn't place where you were from. Like, there's been a few people I know like that. I just know from gigs, but not a geographical gig. Just, oh, they might be there. They could pop up anywhere I am. I've had people, some of them pop up in Germany and you're just like, oh, hello.
I mean, right? I've definitely done that.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen you in Germany before.
Yeah.
Could be German. I don't know.
I feel like actually I've probably seen you guys play in some slightly weird spots.
Oh, yeah, we have done the rounds.
But
again, because we don't post on Instagram, we do now, but like because we never post on Instagram, I feel like a lot of the weird shit we've done hasn't gone documented.
Well, maybe. But then, like, what you need to do is pick out like all the old photos from all the old gigs and then tell little stories with them underneath in the captions. I'd read that. Like I'd engage with that. I'd hit like.
Okay. You'd hit like.
You can quantify like how much I like you using that measure.
Fair play. I'll
but yes, I may appear in High Wycombe, I believe. That's
nice.
The thing.
Cool. Yeah,
because I think despite the not knowing where I was from for quite a long time, I think when we met, I lived in Wycombe.
You did, yeah. But
I
you're also from near where I'm from, aren't you? So
yeah,
well,
I'm from
but like
I'm from Norfolk, so
yeah.
It's confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought you were a High Wycomber for a while. But yeah.
I used to live with Pook for a bit and I've not seen any of that lot since pre-pandemic and I sort of thought, oh well, look, Pook's throwing a party. Ooh.
Yeah.
And I recommend Pook, that anyone else
Pook
come to
may be doing a feature as well on our new album as well.
Of course.
We've got a few
is.
Features on our album. Like we're a features. Fucking like we're Wu-Tang Clan. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Is it going to be properly written down as like Faintest Idea feat?
Oh yeah, of course, person? Of course. Cashing in on Pook's brand name.
Obviously, yeah.
It's mainly his pig squeals, but also his brand name.
I mean, he's got such an official, like, he's a man who does have a brand name, but it also happens to be his surname, which is very convenient, really, isn't it? Like, he's done well there.
Love him.
Anyway, on this rambly note and our deep love of Pook, or Pookles, as I sometimes call him. I haven't spoken to Pook in ages. Maybe I should get him on a podcast. on that note, I think that we should round up for the evening.
Go.
I would like to
come
formally,
to all our gigs, bar our things.
Things from Faintest Idea. I would also like to formally apologise to anyone listening to this who was hoping for an in-depth conversation about music.
That is a perfect representation of what it is being in a band, which is 10% music, 90% fucking admin and like economics and logistics. That's what it is being in a fucking band. Music is very secondary to actually being in a fucking band.
Well, I think there is one additional part of being in a band or being around a band that I don't think we've covered, and that is waiting. So much of just time in a band is just
sitting about.
Waiting. So there you go. Everyone's had to wait for this podcast. And at my typical rate of editing, I guess, my turnaround is approximately 3 months. So,
cool. So what are we now? Late August. So I'll see you at Christmas.
Fucking right. It's been lovely to have you on, Danny. Thanks so much. I will chat to you soon.
Sweet. See you in a bit.
Thank you so much to Danny for being part of the Shout Louder podcast. I mean, we managed to cover so much conversational ground there. It was really nice to catch up with a good friend and also to, you know, I love podcasting as an opportunity to talk seriously about things that, you know, we're thinking about, but perhaps we don't get to articulate, particularly when we've got this literal social distance between a lot of us that we've had for the last 18 months. So yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed that. I hope that you did as well. The Shout Louder podcast, you might have noticed, is taking a slightly different format to what we have done previously. What I've decided to do is to do a series of sort of talk or interview episodes, which are going to be coming out regularly. I'm looking to get a more diverse range of guests as well, so I've got a few different ones planned over the next couple of months. But I thought, well, let's just do talk rather than music. Let's let people be able to fall asleep to it if they want. And then separately, once a month or so, I mean, you know, when I can be asked really, Once a month or so, we're going to be doing a punk rock radio episode where we highlight some of the new releases that have come out that we're particularly excited about. So there's going to be a mix of talk and a mix of music, but they're going to be on separate episodes. I hope that works out for you all. Do let me know if you think we should be doing something differently. I'm always open to hear feedback. You can read all of our articles and things like that at shout-louder.com. We also have a mailing list now so that we can bypass Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of bullshit. You can sign up to the mailing list on our website and we will send you any brand new podcast, articles, interviews, all that kind of thing straight to your inbox. So feel free to catch up with me on socials as well. We're on all of the socials as at Shout Louder Zine. And yeah, if you want to get in touch about something, please do. I'm also particularly up at the moment for hearing recommendations of bands who've got new releases out that you're excited by. There are details for how to submit stuff to the podcast and to the website up on shout-louder.com. Thank you so much to you all for listening. I really, really appreciate your time. I hope you enjoyed that just as much as we did. To close things out, I am going to play Faintest Idea's latest track, which, to be fair, probably came out, I don't know, a year ago? I've no idea. but this is the first track from their upcoming new album. This is their single, Stomp It Down. And in the meantime, I'll see you guys down the front.
And the glass is where it fits.
Stomp it down, stomp it down, stomp it down.
And it's never too long before the rock says,
stomp it down, stomp it down, stomp it down, down, down.
By the boot of the ballot, boot of the ballot will sound. We ain't giving up one inch of ground.
Stomp it down.
Throw proper phone for the lessons not learned.
Stomp it down.
The smoke of the pages burn.